Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan's military leader releases some civilian detainees.
These detainees were divided into three groups. There were a group that has been detained just for their safety and security. These are the group that the military leaders in Sudan agreed with the Prime Minister Hamdok and the mediation team to release them immediately.
A historian says the Tigrayan military advance towards Ethiopia's capital could mark the end of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government. Eswatini's government and teachers agreed to reopen schools November 16. A UNICEF official is in Zimbabwe to assess the country's maternal, newborn, and child health innovations. And President Adama Barrow of Gambia is nominated to stand in the country's December 4th election.
I've been in office for 5 years. I have one main priority for this country, that is development. Development, basically, if you say development, is everything. But I have a slogan, no infrastructure, no development.
And Kenyan animal lobby groups campaign against chicken caging. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Sudan, General Fatah al-Burhan, the man who overthrew the country's civilian-led transitional government on October 25th, late Thursday ordered the release of some civilian members of the ousted government of Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Hamdok remains under house arrest. Journalist Michael Atit in the Sudanese capital Khartoum said those released were part of a group arrested following the takeover for their own safety.
These four civilian members who were released, some of them are members of the Council of Ministers. One of them is the Minister of Information during the previous government. One of them is the Director of the Telecommunication Department. And the other two as well are members of the other political parties. I spoke yesterday morning with a member of the South Sudan mediation team. According to him, he said these detainees were divided into three groups. There were a group that has been detained just for their safety and security. And these are the group that the military leaders in Sudan agreed with the Prime Minister Hamdok and the mediation team to release them immediately. The second group, they were detained due to their immediate participation, and there are some charges being leveled against them. And the other group, who are actually the third group of the detainees, were detained due to their involvement in the protest that has been conducted on the 21st and the 30th of this month.
There was a report, I think I saw somewhere, that a new government had been formed. Has there been any report about this in Khartoum?
There has not been an official announcement of this here in Khartoum. Even the government-owned media has not reported this last night. So this might have been some leaked information, because it has been now almost 10 days since Sudanese are waiting in accordance with the promise made by the head of the military that he would announce the government in a very short time.
The former finance minister in the former transitional government, I think his name is Gibril Ibrahim, has said that the ongoing negotiations have been about restructuring the sovereign council. If that is true now, why would they want to restructure the sovereign council?
James, the sovereign council was established based on the power-sharing deal between the military council by then and the Forces for Freedom and Change coalition, which is a coalition of the political parties. And in accordance with the constitutional document, there are supposed to be 6 members of the civilians and 5 members of the military. After the signing of the Juba peace deal in October 3rd, 2020, the number was then increased. So the constitutional document itself were modified. So some members of the armed struggle group were added to the Sovereign Council, bringing the total number to 14. Sovereign Council were then having more power and much So if the former Minister of Finance says the current negotiation is around this area, maybe they want to delegate more power to the Prime Minister and the Cabinet being the executive wing of the government. And then the Sovereign Council now can remain as symbolic government structural body that would only guide and support the Cabinet to implement the programs of the transitional government.
Michael, thank you always. We do appreciate very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, James.
That was journalist Michael Atit speaking with us from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. A former university professor and historian specializing in the Horn of Africa says the Tigrayan military advance towards the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, could mark the end of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government. Professor Jerry Prunier says the Ethiopian military has disintegrated and the rebels are well-armed. Professor Prunier spoke with John Tanza, managing editor of VOA South Sudan in Focus program.
First of all, it's a little bit more complicated than what you say. It is not the Oromo Liberation Front, which is a political organization and doesn't have an army. It is the Oromo Liberation Army, OLA, which has seceded from the OLF because they are a fighting force. They are, you know, a military outfit. Now, are they centralized? Are they well organized? The answer is no. You know, the Oromos are the largest minority in the country, the largest group, about 38 million people, which is not quite a tribe, it's a people. There are many countries that doesn't have 38 million population. But these Oromo are not very well organized, and they are not very centralized. So the solution for the TDF would be to say we can occupy Addis. We don't do again what we did in 1991, which led to a dead end. Instead, we ask the Oromos to take Addis and change the government, and we will join in a broad conference to decide what can be done. The problem is that the Oromos are not very unified. So it is very difficult for the Tigrayans to say, okay, we are very careful, we don't rush things, we don't take Addis, we let the Oromos, whose country it is, because Addis Ababa, they don't even call it Addis Ababa, they call it Chinchine, which is the Oromo name. They can take it because this is their country, and we're going to respect their presence and then negotiate with them.
Talk to me about the shuttle diplomacy. The U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa is in Addis Ababa. President Uhuru Kenyatta has talked about the need for dialogue. Talk to me about the dynamics of this shuttle diplomacy.
It's actually very dry, and it's unlikely that it serves any purpose for the time being. Once the shooting stops, yes, perhaps. But right now, both sides want to go to the bitter end. You know, Abiy says we should all die defending Ethiopia. This is what he calls Ethiopia. Basically, Ethiopia means his government. And the Tigrayans don't say anything, but it is clear that they want to go till they win. So the question is, how will their victory take shape? The shuttle diplomacy, I'm sorry, is not very useful.
Any prospects for peace? Because the African Union has been calling for dialogue.
The TPLF will not listen, that's for sure, because, you know, their people are starving and they want to blow this government off the ground and have revenge and also bring food to their people. Abiy could tactically say that he's ready to negotiate.
Gerald Prunier is a former university professor and historian specializing in the Horn of Africa. He was speaking with John Tanza, managing editor of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. In Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, the Ministry of Education and Training and the Swaziland National Association of Teachers have reached an agreement to reopen schools on November 16. Schools closed in August this year as students joined the pro-democracy movement and burned down school buildings around the country. The protesters want to have a say in the election of their prime minister rather than the king appointing the prime minister. Meanwhile, parents and the teachers' union say they are against a consent form which the government wants wants all parents of children under the age of 18 to sign, saying their children will not participate directly or indirectly in acts of vandalism and destruction of property. According to the form, if they do, they will be suspended, expelled, or be liable for damage or loss caused to the school or government. Mbangu Adramini is president of the Swaziland National Association of Teachers. He says the form violates the rights of students to protest.
The teachers' union told the Ministry of Education that the consent forms are not necessary. They are not supposed to be signed by parents because they are infringing the learners' rights. As a result, we thank the Ministry of Education that they did understand our position and they decided to make the forms not mandatory as it was before. So it is no longer a requirement for them to go back to school. So any school that is going to make parents sign the form is going to do so at their own will, not that they are being forced by the government to do so.
So you are saying that the students, I mean, the government should not issue the form, but the students can sign form with their individual schools. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. The students should not be forced to sign the forms. Because the forms have already been issued, so those parents who have decided to sign the forms, they can do so, but in those forms, they are no longer a mandatory requirement for them to get back to school.
What is the general reaction among parents to this demand for them to sign the form?
Most parents decided to reject the form. They said that this form is like they are signing something that is going to infringe their children's rights. In the meeting that we had with the Minister of Education, UNICEF was represented, and then also UNICEF did drop some sentences into the Minister of Education that the forms themselves should not be mandatory to the student because it is now infringing their rights to education, because the right to education should not be hindered by any element.
Exactly what is in this form? What does the form say?
The content of the form will say that students were signing that they are not going to engage themselves in any protest in the school. You know, protesting is a right. So you cannot take away the right to protest. Unfortunately, for government thought that students are protesting on the issue of political reforms. But there are other issues that can make learners to complain in schools. So if you say learners should not complain, what do you mean? In fact, even the political reforms, it is their right to complain about them. You cannot take that right away.
As you indicated, there was a meeting with the Minister of Education.
Yes.
Was there anything decided in terms of when schools should reopen?
We agreed that the tentative date or the proposed date for reopening of schools, it is the 16th of November. So we wanted the government to utilize the whole of next week to try and address students' concerns. We expect that by the time schools open, the concerns of the students would have been addressed by the Ministry of Education and schools, because some of the grievances were addressed to individual schools.
Thank you so much again. It's a pleasure to speak with you, and please keep us updated.
Thank you for having me.
Mbangu Adramini is president of the Swaziland National Association of Teachers. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 5th. Gambian President Adama Barrow has called on the country's Electoral Commission to assert its independence and avoid any conduct that would warrant presidential candidates to reject the December 4th election results. As Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, five supporters of the ruling NPP party died on Thursday in a car accident hours before Mr. Barrow's nomination.
Thursday was a somber day for the National People's Party as five of their supporters died in a car accident hours before President Barrow's nomination.
One of our vehicles that was coming for nomination was involved in a fatal accident. We lost five of our members. I extend my condolences to the families on behalf of my family and the entire government and the Gambian people and the political family.
President Barrow paying tribute to his dead supporters. Speaking to reporters shortly after presenting his nomination papers, the president outlined his developmental agenda if re-elected.
I've been in office for 5 years. I have one main priority for this country, that is development. Development, basically, if you say development, is everything. But I have a slogan, no infrastructure, no development. I will continue with my infrastructural development.
President Barrow's candidacy is being backed by five political parties, including dictator Jammeh's former ruling APRC party. The president has been taking heat after being accused of partnering with a party whose former leader has been accused of committing crimes against humanity.
We are in alliance with APRC based on principles. The principles is they are a registered party, they are legally operating in this country, and we are also a party, that's why we align with the APRC. And it's in the best interest of this country. It's in the best interest of national security. It's in the best interest of reconciliation.
Barrow says he would concede defeat if the elections are fair.
If anybody is a member of the IEC, automatically you are the referee. And if you are the referee, you must be independent. If you are independent, it makes the job easy for you. If you are independent, it makes the job easy for the players. If you are independent, it makes it very easy for all the parties to accept the final results.
Esa Fall, a former prosecutor with the International Criminal Court and also the former lead counsel of Gambia's Truth Commission, presented his nomination papers on Thursday. Fall has accused Barrow's NPP of preventing his supporters to attend his nomination, a claim VOA couldn't independently verify.
I never thought I would witness a day in which democracy would be shackled by a very unpopular government, wanting it buried. But the Gambian youth, young men and women, have refused.
Fall claimed that the transporters that he booked to transport his supporters were denied access to fuel and were offered higher fares to undermine his nomination.
You think you have spoiled our nomination? No. You may have dampened what has happened here today, but you have strengthened our resolve to make sure that on December 4th, we change this government and start the rebuilding of this country.
The nomination exercise ends on Friday. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
UNICEF Director of Health Program, Dr. Abubakar Campo, is in Zimbabwe to assess maternal, newborn, and child health innovations. He will visit some rural clinics to also check on UNICEF-funded HIV programs. Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from Shamva, one of Zimbabwe's rural areas.
Belinda Kaziwisi is from Mount Darwin, Zimbabwe, which is near the Mozambique border, about 200 kilometers north of Harare. She's one of the Zimbabwean mothers seeing the benefits that have grown from money provided by UNICEF. With her healthy baby in her hands, she says, "What I see has changed for the better is that from when I got pregnant until up to the delivery of my child, I did not pay anything," she says. "When I delivered, I was given soap, cotton, and other things for free. It was all nice compared to what used to happen before," says Kaziwisi. With funding from UNICEF, the Zimbabwean government has hired health workers who encourage pregnant mothers in rural villages to seek assistance from the country's health institutions to avoid complications. One of them is Leti Chindundundu. She says, "We encourage pregnant mothers to come to clinics. We tell them, when you get to the third month of your pregnancy, please go to the clinic. Health workers there will tell you what to do. The gentle delivery of your baby becomes easy. Even your baby will be taken care of in the tummy, since there are now so many diseases." Dr. Chajudini Oyewale is the UNICEF representative in Zimbabwe. He says having health workers in rural villages and funding the country's health sector are both paying off. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Mount Darwin, Zimbabwe.
Animal welfare advocates in Kenya are campaigning against the battery cage system of poultry management for commercial purposes. The system has been banned in Europe out of concern for the birds' welfare, but it is beginning to gain popularity in Africa. Victoria Amunga reports from Kakamega, Kenya.
Grace Acheng's 1,400 hens have been her source of income for a year now. Acheng says friends who also keep such birds introduced her to this system of wire cages for hens. The system is called battery cages from the arrangement of rows of identical cages linked together as in an artillery battery. To farmers like Acheng, these cages are the easiest way to raise chickens as opposed to the traditional free range.
You can imagine the stress of walking, picking eggs in between the birds, or even if they have where they are producing, they are laying. You might even find some which are dirty, they have pooped on it. So yes, birds are supposed to be left to free range. But those experts again should realize that there is technology coming in. And so that is the battery caging.
However, animal welfare groups are campaigning against battery cage technology for what they say is violating the birds' welfare. Africa Network for Animal Welfare's program manager Dennis Bahati told VOA that the technology that is fast gaining popularity in Kenya is compromising the health of the birds.
So these birds are placed in an area where they cannot actually express their natural behavior. And because of that, some of their natural behaviors like stretching their wings and flapping is actually restricted to a big extent. The other aspect, because of that confinement and these birds not being able to exercise, they are prone to a condition we call osteoporosis, where their bones are actually very fragile and they're actually prone to fracture anytime.
Kenya's poultry sector has not been clearly regulated, but state officials say a poultry farming bill that aims to ensure poultry welfare is adhered to is due to be law in 6 months. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Kakamega, Kenya.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the CAF Women Football Champions League. The maiden edition of the Total Energies CAF Women Champions League begins later today in Egypt. The competition will be held across two venues in the capital, 30 June Stadium and the Cairo Military Academy Stadium, between the 5th and the 19th of November 2021. The 30 June Stadium in Cairo, Egypt will see host Wadi Degla take on Mali's AS Mandi in the opening game. Wadi Degla are placed in Group A alongside AS Mandi from Mali, Malabo Kings of Equatorial Guinea, and Ghana's Hasakas Ladies. Group B of the competition consists of Kenya's Viega Queens, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa, AS Far of Morocco, and Rivers Angels of Nigeria. Hasakas Ladies of Ghana will open their campaign on Friday against Malabo Queens. Coach Basigi will lead the Ghanaian ladies into the debut tournament.
I don't want to put pressure on the players. We also need a win as well. So we are doing all that we can to get the needed results. I have already prepared their mind psychologically for them to know that it is not about structure, it is not about height, but it is about the mental toughness of each player. So they should be mentally tough and be quick on the ball, and that will kill the game.
Staying with football news, Ivory Coast forward Wilfred Zaha is considering his international future after the Crystal Palace star asked to be left out of the country's forthcoming World Cup qualifiers. Zaha was missing from the squad to face Mozambique and Cameroon, with Ivory Coast boss Patrice Bineau revealing on Thursday the 28-year-old was unwilling to travel. Zaha missed Palace's Premier League match against Arsenal last month because of illness after playing 74 minutes of Ivory Coast's victory over Malawi in Abidjan. In rugby news, a record the South African national men rugby team the Springboks have held since 2007 is set to be wiped from rugby's record books by the All Blacks in the remainder of their end-of-year tour of Europe. The All Blacks still have tests to play against Italy, Ireland and France, and are within touching distance of a number of current records. If they score another 31 points on the tour, which they are likely to do in the first half alone against Italy on Saturday, they will break the record for the most points in a calendar year. And finally, the Great Ethiopian 10-kilometer road race, which was due to take place on Sunday, the 14th of November 2021, has been suspended. The suspension follows the state of emergency in Ethiopia. Organizers said in a statement that they are monitoring the situation closely and will be back in touch in the coming weeks with more news about a new date for the race. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, November 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2.